A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 250. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about A Ghost Story for Christmas. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon in England. Hello.
This is our annual look back at the BFI box set for A Ghost Story for Christmas, which was a BBC annual event where they would have a dramatized ghost story that would be presented around Christmas time each year. And it, in particular, ran for a number of years in the 70s. They did one a year for 8 years. And we are now looking at two of those, The Treasure of Abbot Thomas from 1974, and The Ash Tree from 1975.
And of course, they are tales by one of the great British ghost story writers, M.R. James, the writer who's most associated with that 70s TV series, or as you say, Brian, an annual event of A Ghost Story for Christmas. And it's the last of the two James tales from the original series. As you say, 74 and 75. And after that, they went to other authors for the last three. And we're celebrating 250 episodes. Woohoo! To do so, we're sampling the comforts and joys of this seasonal box set. A box set which never fails to delight in a way, Brian. One that we've come back to many times. And here we are again with our sort of seasonal offering of some Christmas ghost stories.
Yes, it's always a wonderful one to come back to, for sure. So to give a bit of background, and we've talked about this before, A Ghost Story for Christmas ran on the BBC from 1971 to 1978 with these annual stories that would air right around Christmas each year. And they were initially using the stories of M.R. James, who is one of the great ghost story writers from Great Britain.
Absolutely. But as we said, towards the end of the series, they did branch out into other writers. Notably, they did a Charles Dickens story. And then they did, to finish the series, they did two original modern ghost stories. The whole series was directed by Lawrence Gordon Clark in association with his production colleague, the producer Rosemary Hill. And it's a splendid series that we've come back to many a time.
Yes, that's right. And they did five of these M.R. James ghost stories. They fit very well with the type of work they were doing. And these are the last two that we are covering. So we've now covered all of the other 1970s A Ghost Story for Christmas annual broadcasts. So we're finishing up this run, which is sort of nice to do.
Yes, and if you want to find our previous visits to this box set, then the best thing is to go to BritishInvaders.com and use the search function. And if you simply search for Ghost, I think you'll find the number of episodes we've done about this. Of course, it will bring up a few other ghost stories that we've covered. But yeah, you'll find all our previous episodes at BritishInvaders.com.
Yes, of course, Great Britain has a very strong tradition for ghost stories in general, and also a very strong tradition for ghost stories at Christmas time, which certainly dates to authors like Charles Dickens and M.R. James.
Okay, so let us begin for this episode by looking at the first of our two stories. This one is The Treasure of Abbot Thomas, adapted from the last story in M.R. James' first collection of ghost stories, which was called Ghost Stories of an Antiquary. That was published in 1904. And it starts with introducing us to the character, the main character, the Reverend Justin Somerton, an Oxford academic and a cleric, a well-known scholar, skeptic, and as we see at the start of this episode, a debunker of supernatural events. No doubt, you know, setting up what's to come for him.
Yes, absolutely. And this is a typical M.R. James idea of having the academic investigating something that leads him into something quite dangerous. Somerton was played by Michael Bryant, who had previously taken the lead in another BBC ghost story, Nigel Neal's The Stone Tape, from Christmas 1972, which was also a Christmas ghost story, but before they had actually started this series. So it's nice to see him doing a couple of these shows. Somerton's young student, Lord Peter Davering, was played by Paul Lavers, and he invites Somerton to his family home to take part in a séance organized by this couple who he believes are taking advantage of his own widowed mother. And this allows Somerton to demonstrate his point of view, his skepticism, and also do a bit of detective work, which is kind of a fun aspect that they injected into this.
Yes, and as we say, sets him up as the scholar, the expert on these sorts of things, a debunker of the supernatural. But of course, at the same time as doing that, he's also involved in his own researches. And in particular, obviously for this show, he's researching the history of the mysterious Abbot Thomas of the title. He's in the cathedral library, and it's a very Jamesian touch. The scholar who's digging through the archives and is going to discover perhaps more than he bargained for. Which is strange in a way, because M.R. James himself spent so much of his own academic career digging through the archives. I mean, it's interesting how often that inspires his stories. But here we are with another typical Jamesian scholar. And of course, the legend of Abbot Thomas, as Somerton discovers, suggests that the abbot may have concealed a hoard of golden coins, 20,000 of them to be precise, and that he's left clues to their location. And one of the things that will perhaps emerge is it's not quite clear whether he left clues as a treasure hunt or as a form of a trap, because there's also hints about a mysterious guardian of the treasure. So we've got Somerton sort of beginning sort of idly just translating Latin and enjoying some archives. But as the story unfolds, he gets more and more drawn in to this possible treasure hunt.
Yes, that's right. The idea of the treasure as something that they would actually be looking for themselves is something that they sort of dismiss at the beginning, that, you know, oh, there's some old treasure thing involved, whatever. Until they see the document that says how big it is, and they're sort of stunned and I guess a little dazzled by this treasure, the idea of this treasure, that they are then seeking to try to get this extremely valuable treasure. So the Reverend and his student are both analyzing these stained glass windows. They're translating lots of Latin and sort of working to crack this medieval code of a sort. So they're, investigating all of these old mysterious clues. And it does take on the feel of a treasure hunt through these old documents and artifacts.
Yes, that's right. They're on the hunt. They're a pair of detectives. It is marvellous. Yeah, there's clues in stained glass window images. There's Latin. Oh, it's all, you know, very mysterious. And it obviously piques the interest of Somerton and his steward. And then, as you say, Brian, once they work out how much 20,000 gold coins would be worth in their present time, they, particularly Somerton, starts to get a strange look on his face. It's more than an academic interest at that point.
Yes, that's right. And it leads Somerton to go out at night searching for this treasure in an underground water culvert. It was a well in the original story. They sort of changed the setting to match what was available to them. But he goes on this sort of ill-advised search at night in the dark, and what he discovers is more than just ancient gold.
Yes, indeed. He discovers far more than he intended, but there you go. So, the Treasure of Abbot Thomas was adapted for television by John Bowen. He's a writer who'd earlier done a very well-regarded play for today called Robin Redbreast, which, who knows, might come up on British Invaders in the future. It's a possible show. And he's also associated with the Ghost Story for Christmas strand because he would write in 1978 the last of the 70s ghost stories, The Ice House, which we've covered on a previous show. You may remember that one if you've listened to our episodes. It's a modern ghost story with a sort of slightly strange but somehow disturbing feel to it as a modern ghost story. We found it a little bit obscure when we talked about it, but it somehow disturbs, I think, Brian.
Yes, it's a very strange one, but it does have some interesting stuff in it.
And, of course, Bowen had to work with James's original story. Now, of course, if you've read The Treasure of Abbot Thomas, you'll know that it contains quite a bit of Latin, plus it goes into quite a lot of detail on the code and the code breaking, which obviously it was felt wouldn't quite come across in a TV series. And as you say, Brian, they had to work with what they had on location, so they couldn't use the big well that's in the story. They used this underground water passageway. And of course, again, the story is mostly told in the book or in the short story by Somerton sort of recounting what's happened to a friend, whereas we get it presented as an unfolding series of events, which obviously fits television much better. And of course, Bowen also added the séance at the beginning of the episode and introduces the character of Somerton's student, Lord Davarin, in order for him to have a foil for his detective work.
Yes, that's right. And the setting originally was in Germany, and they couldn't do that. They had to move it to England. But they also found that the setting as it was described, with this well and the things around it and the stairs and so on, what was described was something that doesn't exist anywhere as far as they could tell. So these types of ghost stories tend to be quite closely coupled with the setting that they're set in and the buildings and so on. So they sort of reworked things a bit to use this culvert and change things around in some ways in order to have the story match with the setting that they could actually have.
So The Treasure of Abbot Thomas was directed, of course, by Lawrence Gordon Clark, who I think directed all of the 8 ghost stories for Christmas. And if you watch this on the DVD box set that we've been looking at, which we'll be talking about in a moment, you'll know that you can play these shows with an introduction by Lawrence Gordon Clark. But because that contains spoilers, you probably want to watch that introduction at the end, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. Lawrence Gordon Clark did indeed direct all 8 of these. He produced some of the earlier ones, and then Rosemary Hill took over and produced some of the later ones. And they had a variety of writers doing the adaptation and then later the original stories for the last couple.
And one of the things I think Lawrence Gordon Clark does very well is find locations for these ghost stories. And this time they journeyed to, as you say, Brian, they couldn't afford Germany, but they journeyed to Wells Cathedral, which is in the southwest of England, if you're not familiar with it. Although, interestingly, in his introduction, Lawrence Gordon Clark mentions that he had to overcome some resistance from the cathedral authorities because they'd had a bad experience the previous year with a somewhat controversial version of the Canterbury Tales, which was filmed there. And because the broadcast show contains some some ribald Chaucerian scenes and humour, Brian. It caused some problems for the deacon of the cathedral, and he was a little bit unsure about another BBC production coming to them.
They were not happy with some of the things that had been done in those spaces in order to film the scenes for the show. So in this case, when they saw the script and saw the types of things that they were doing for this, it turned out not to be a problem.
Yes, and of course, the cathedral itself, perfect setting for this story. Got great gargoyles, it's got the surrounding grounds, it's got the roof, which of course they go up on to solve one of the clues, and it all provides a simply splendid backdrop for an English ghost story.
Yes, absolutely. It does make us wonder if there is a nice little sideline for English cathedrals of hosting television productions at the time in the 70s. We've certainly seen a number of churches and cathedrals show up in shows like this. So it's interesting to see those types of settings being used in that way.
Yes, lots of lovely cathedrals to be seen in the series A Ghost Story for Christmas.
We should mention the incidental music for this, the rather spooky music by Jeffrey Burgeon that uses some choral music with lots of countertenor in it and mixes in some strange recorded sounds and electronic effects and things, and gives you something quite haunting, which is rather nice.
It certainly is. It's not quite as spooky as the soundtrack to A Children of the Stones, but it's pretty good, actually. I really enjoyed it. It's disturbing.
Yes, I believe this was the first time that they had original incidental music written for one of the Ghost Story for Christmas productions, and they did very well with it.
Right, yeah. It does work very well.
Yeah, he would go on to do some similar music for the closing credits of the BBC adaptation of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy from 1979.
Ah, another fantastic series. And yes, as you say, the music at the end, well remembered from that show. We've also got some special effects as well as the wonderful music. So we do get some nasty effects. And if you know the original story, yes, we do get a sort of slime monster. It's only glimpsed, of course, because, you know, these stories work best when things are implied rather than actually shown. But we get that, and we do get glimpses of the ghost as well.
Yes, absolutely. And as you say, those are done quite well with shadowy glimpses of things, which is very nice. The Treasure of Abbot Thomas was broadcast on December 23rd, 1974. It ran for 37 minutes, and of course it was in color.
Lovely. So that's our first story. We turn to the availability of these two stories. And of course, we turn to this wonderful box set from the British Film Institute, the BFI, A Ghost Story for Christmas. We have been looking or talking about, I think, the revised 2013 version, which has all the stories up to and including the 2010 John Hurt version of Whistle and I'll Come to You. The box set, you may know, also contains some ghost story readings by Christopher Lee, Robert Powell and Michael Bryant, who stars in this particular story. There's lots of extras. There's the Lawrence Gordon Clark introductions. There's a rather splendid booklet full of fascinating articles about each of the stories covered by well-known television historians. And it's quite wonderful. It's £38 currently on Amazon here in the UK. And it, you know, we take it down from the shelf once a year, Brian, and it never disappoints. It's one of the best things I've bought while doing the British Invaders show with you. Regular listeners will know that I have a tendency to give away my DVDs in competitions once we've covered a show, but you'll be sorry to hear that I'm not giving this one away. This one's staying firmly with me.
Yes, it is a lovely box set and covers a lot of these different shows from the late 1960s up to 2010. And it, as you say, has lots of extras. There are some readings of short stories as audio only that are on there as well. Lots of good stuff there for sure.
Yes, the only entry in the Ghost Story for Christmas canon that it doesn't cover, of course, is the 2013 Mark Gatiss adaptation of the Tractate Middoth, which as yet has not had a release on DVD or on demand. So we're hoping for that. But still, this splendid set goes up to 2010, £38 here in the UK in Region 2. But over there in Region 1, Brian?
In Region 1, there is no release. You can get the Region 2 import on Amazon.com for about $44. So that's not a bad option to do it that way. But to see these, you will need to import the Region 2 version.
And actually, I'm slightly surprised that there isn't a Region 1 set. I would have thought this one would be quite popular, but there you go. Unfortunate, but you can get it as an import, as you say.
Yes, indeed.
So that will do it for our first episode. Next time, we're going to be moving away from The Treasure of Abbot Thomas, and instead we're going to be looking at a tale of witchcraft, the perils of property ownership, some sexual attraction, and some truly terrible spider monsters as we tackle the last of the original M.R. James adaptations, The Ash Tree from 1975.
And we will also do our own reviews and comments and rate and recommend these two stories, and maybe even pick some favorites from the box set that we always enjoy coming back to. So until then, you can find all of our Ghost Story episodes, and in fact all of our episodes, at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group, and you can join the conversation there, which is always fun.
Absolutely. Come by and join in the discussions. Or if you enjoy slaying the odd spider monster yourself, then why not check out the game and television reviews in shows such as Critical Myth, Pod Culture, or Girls Gone Wow at the Voice of Geeks Network at vognetwork.com. It's an internet streaming radio network with many great shows, including British Invaders. We go out on Mondays and Tuesdays, and you'll find all the other podcasts and a game to get involved with as well. So plenty of stuff there.
Yes, always good stuff and very participatory over there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed. And until the next episode, it's Eamon in England also signing off.